You're good on your end with kids running around. Hey, look up. Last day of school next Tuesday. Then parenting really takes Then parenting really happens. How many summer camps can you go to? How many things?
This will be our first
double dose
school summer.
Yeah.
Because he was in daycare until.
And now he's alive in the neighborhood, baby.
Yep.
Get a little bug spray, a little suntan lotion on. Everybody will be. We'll be having some fun. MCCSC's last day is next Tuesday. RBB's last day is next Wednesday. And we got all kinds of great things to go. So we've got, as we mentioned, Reds Dodgers tonight. Tomorrow night we'll do Pacers Knicks game 6 in the Eastern Conference. There's a huge night in Indy tonight. You know what's going on tonight? Caitlin Clark makes her debut at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, the home debut, with the Indiana Fever, and they welcome the New York Liberty to town. So this is just very interesting how you're New Yorking and New Yorking. The Fever, who were beaten 22 points on Tuesday, the Pacers were beaten 30. That's a tough night for Indiana basketball fans. We will see Caitlin Clark's home debut on Amazon Prime or on WTHR out of Indianapolis. That's Channel 13. You guys should know that. Know that by now. So if you're a Caitlin Clark fan, you get Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Monday. That's every other day there to get you started. I think they go every other day until Memorial Day weekend. So if you're a big basketball fan or if you're just interested in what's going on, I bet she'll have more than 20 points tonight. I bet she'll have less than 10 turnovers. That was her first game. It's tough. You don't know until you know. And New York Liberty is really good. Brianna Stewart, Sabrina Ionescu, Jonquel Jones. That's why they are 8.5-point favorites tonight. Lines on everything. We get that from our English friends. You know that, right? They bet on what time we're going to bet on everything. On Saturday, Reds and Dodgers will follow our entire day from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway beginning at 11 a.m. We'll have coverage of everything that's happening. And then Pacers, if they do not take care of business tomorrow night, we will be with you 3 to 6 on a very active Sunday at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Why? We will complete the field. The final three cars will be the last row of 11, last row of three, row 11. And we'll have the fast 12, fast 6, pole, all that fun stuff. If the Pacers are playing game 7, we got to go to New York with game 7. So the Indianapolis 500 will be a week from Sunday. Yeah, we always do that. The 108th edition of the greatest spectacle in racing will be May 26th, as it has been on our airwaves since 1949. All right, I haven't seen you in a while. Here we are, portaling through the month of May, a portaling we may go. You know, we may be distracted by the NBA. We may be distracted by the WNBA. Heck, we might even be distracted by the PGA Championship down in Valhalla this week. But the IU basketball news always tends to force itself to the front of the line in this part, regardless of what time of year it is. And as we have talked for the last few weeks about what's next for this roster, we knew there were two spots left open, and you accurately projected that you thought one of them would go to a front court backup or a front court, you're just adding more ammunition to that front court, and that's exactly what Indiana fans heard. The visit was, a couple days ago? The official announcement was last night, right after we get off the air. Don't you love that? 6:07. Let's do that. Tell us who the new Hoosier is and why basketball never sleeps. We all know that. But this one is the newest Hoosier is a Hoosier. And to be frank, we haven't had a ton of those recently.
Yeah. Langdon Hatton, who is not even the first Hoosier first Indiana native, if you want to say, in this transfer class, obviously Luke Goody. Is from Fort Wayne.
Auburn?
He went to Homestead.
Okay.
So Fort Wayne.
Area. Fort Wayne suburbs.
There you go.
Expanding.
Everything's a suburb in Fort Wayne. I've never met a town that size where everything was so far from everything else. it's like driving in Atlanta, but it's Fort Wayne.
And there's not as much traffic.
It doesn't make any sense. There's no traffic.
Right.
But everything is still 10 miles from everything.
A lot of cornfields in between. So two Indiana kids on the roster.
Hatton's from Southern Indiana, down I think around the Corydon area, if I'm not mistaken. And he spent a year at William and Mary, and then two at Bellarmine. last year was far and away his best year of college. He started, if not every game, then virtually every game. I think he started every game for Bellarmine last season. Averaged double figures in scoring. Obviously, it was a tough season for Scott Davenport, who had you know, otherwise kind of navigated the transition to Division I more smoothly over the previous couple of years. But Hatton really stood out. He went into the portal this spring. You know, I think I would say probably from my perspective that the smoke kind of began to build around this about 2 weeks ago. But you always knew that a guy was going to need to visit campus before anyone would ever hand in a final decision, anything would ever be sure. What is interesting is I heard, and I don't know, this is rumor mongering, I suppose. Forgive me, but
you can do it.
I heard Kentucky was, pretty interested in getting him to campus in Lexington, and he said no. So I think I believe there is some desire for Indiana, like not just, hey, I want to go play in Big Ten basketball. I got 1 year left. I'll play off the bench. It's fine, but I want to play at a higher level. I mean, I think there was a draw in IU when you talk about in-state guys, and no, Indiana hasn't had a lot of them the last few years. I think he, Hatton wanted to be at Indiana. As you said, we've talked about it for a while. It felt like Indiana needed a sort of reserve big. I know there were people that said, could Indiana just stand to add more shooters? I think the reality is these last two spots, Hatton would probably play. First of all, I would say Hatton would probably play more than another guard you would add to this roster, because unless somebody gets hurt or you have a Trey Galloway doesn't recover quite the way you hoped, etc., you already have kind of everything there that you're going to need from a guard perspective. You have Rice, you have Cups, you have Carlisle, you have Galloway, you have Leal.
Ja'Kai Newton, perhaps?
Yeah, Ja'Kai Newton. You're going to play some Luke Goody, some Bryson Tucker. When your bigger lineups are on the floor, those guys are going to be three. When your smaller lineups are on the floor, I still just named you six guards.
Half the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I get the desire to just sort of say you have more guys that can shoot 38%, but if they're not going to be on the floor that much, I don't know how much it makes a difference. Whereas, as we've talked about, you'd be surprised if Indiana doesn't start Malik Renu and Umar Ballo together, but Ballo has never been a high minutes guy in college, and Renu has consistently struggled with fouls, particularly against high major or higher level competition in his first two seasons. Now, Ballo may play a little bit more at Indiana, which is a program that will probably feature him a little bit more, particularly offensively, than Arizona did. Renu will probably get better defending without fouling. Both of those things will happen. But you still have to account for what you do if one of them goes down injured for a month, or what you do if one of them gets in foul trouble, or both of them get in foul trouble, or just the 10 minutes a game where, Umar Ballo comes out after 7 minutes of the first half, you go small, then Malik Renu needs to come out after 10 minutes, you bring in Langdon Hatton, then you bring in Ballo next to him, then you bring Renu back in, and Hatton plays 5-6 minutes a half, and it's you're still going to get some good small lineups, and you're still going to get plenty of the two big ball that Mike Woodson clearly prefers at times, but you still need a bridge between them. There's literally nobody else.
And you need guys to practice and do all that stuff as well, and if there's one program, and no one cries for Argentina or Indiana basketball, but the injury bug is real. And you saw last year and the year before that not having all hands on deck. Now, this is scholarship 12, correct? There is still one more remaining. That's the tough one, because as you've illustrated, getting someone now means somebody else has to shift positions or shift gears?
Or you're just taking somebody that...
As a developmental type project?
Yeah, that you...
I
mentioned, maybe it wasn't to you, I know we didn't talk last week, I'm writing something for tomorrow, I know that this is already in there. You could look at like a Josh Newkirk, Tom Crean knew.
He only had one more year with Yogi
Ferrell. He liked Josh Newkirk. Newkirk needed the year because he was recovering from knee surgery. It was like, hey, we'll take you. You'll be on scholarship. You're never going to play.
Sounds like Ja'Kai Newton already, though.
Well, but now Newton maybe, I think you're hopeful at this point after he got all of last season off that he's ready for this season. The point is, maybe somebody developmental who doesn't mind redshirting, a la Race Thompson, who reclassifies midsummer, Archie Miller promises him that red shirt year, says, I'm not going to use you. I'm not going to burn you. I'm going to give you the year to adjust and get better. You know, it could be a number of things, but those players are obviously fewer and further between. So, you know, it's...
Is that because everybody thinks they can step in and play somewhere right
well,
now?
Well, just because how many situations out there are like that? I mean, you need a guy with
I'm going to flip it, though. I'm going to say how many times you get an opportunity to play at Indiana basketball.
Sure, but, you know, if you're arriving as the 13th man, I think
you should know that. It means something.
And I think that you would want to show up a la Josh Newkirk as an example with a firm idea of what the plan is for you.
Right.
You don't want to just be the one that's, just you know, fill a seat at the end of the bench and we'll figure it out in year three.
But if it doesn't work, you don't sit out a year anymore. You can just move next year. You can kind of take it.
But if you're Indiana,
you don't want to do that.
It's not so much you don't want to do it. It's that if you're taking this player, you are investing specifically in this player on the idea in this hypothetical we're talking about that you'll have that you can future plan. You can future proof with them and your plans. So you got to get the buy-in from the player to say the plan here is you don't play this year. Bar some absolute extreme catastrophe. But you are part here is a clear path to you being a part of the plan in the very near future. But then that requires buy-in from both sides.
It does, and that's what makes it interesting because I don't want to be that guy, but I'll be that guy. The 13th guy never plays. And we get sometimes, like this conversation right now, we're all worried about who the 13th guy is who never plays. So if he never plays and never plays, the upside of this discussion, right, is working him into the system in the future.
Yeah.
Because 10 years ago, the 13th guy had a totally different role. Because you had to sit out a year to transfer. You had to sit out. There was no oops, maybes, or anything else. So it's a different series. It's a different scenario of events now. Do I have that? I think I've got that right. It is a completely different roster construction in the I've got to win now in the transfer market where you just can't put a guy on the shelf, perhaps,
or 3 years down the road. And that's the tricky part is you'd like that.
Yes.
You'd like to not go into every offseason saying we need five guys out of the portal, we need some luck with spring prep recruiting, we need this, we need that. You'd love to be in a situation where, you know, maybe to use Indiana's last year roster as an example, hey, it was a little bit of a down year. Wasn't actually terrible, just wasn't up to snuff. They won 19 games. They went 10-10. They weren't good enough when it mattered. But let's get Malik Renew back, Mackenzie Mbako back, Trey Galloway back. Let's maybe keep two more young guys. And again, this is where the buy-in comes. CJ Gunn looks around and says, "Well, it's next year's my junior year." If I'm staying and I'm still on the bench my junior year, is that really what I want, what's best for my career? But what you'd like is that ability to have enough guys where maybe all you need is two or three pieces in the portal, not five or six. But again, that cuts both ways because you need to strike that fine balance of those young guys seeing enough opportunity, you know, believing and then seeing the proof of your plan for them, being willing to be patient in a time when you don't necessarily have to be.
How much patience is left in college basketball because of freedom of movement?
Yeah, not a lot.
There's going to be guys that get to
maybe you're in a situation where you can put some big NIL dollars on the table. But even then, certain guys will say, well, but it's less money, but I'll get to play.
That's what kids want to do. They want to play. Nobody likes to practice. They like to play. That's what gets you on SportsCenter. That's what gets you noticed. It's silly, but that's kids.
And this is why, listen, this is why we all ask Matt Painter all March, how do you do it?
Right.
Is because most people don't. And to his credit, Painter does. And he got buy-in from, you know, Caleb First, for example, whose minutes fell pretty substantially from two seasons ago to last season.
Off a cliff.
But you know, you never heard anything about, in fact, I don't think First even went into the portal. You never heard anything about, Caleb First is complaining, he's causing trouble, there's discord in the locker room, whatever. You know, Mason Gillis, depending on how you want to see it, kind of got recruited over when they took Lance Jones. That's not completely accurate, but it's a different player, but
style.
You can envision a world where if Lance Jones doesn't come to Purdue, your starting lineup has Mason Gillis at the three. I know he's positionally a little bit more of a four,
yeah,
a smaller four, but like you could still envision a world where he gets more minutes if Lance Jones doesn't show up. The point is, the reason that we ask Painter so much, so often, and so much about it is because it's a rarity, and it's not just what a coach prioritizes. It's not just about what the coach wants or what the coach says he needs or whatever. It is also about what players are willing to buy into.
Fans, on the other hand, which we always incorporate in our discussions, because that's who listens to these and reads columns, Zach Osterman, Indy Star. Please support local journalism at Zach Osterman, IndyStar.com. The 13th guy used to, why don't we just give it to the Indiana kid who would just love to be there and, you know, play, da-da-da-da-da. Well, because Mike Woodson has to win. That's the other part of this equation that gets left out.
And you also don't want to be in a situation where you get to a point where,
if they want to walk on, help yourself.
Well, but you also don't want to get into a situation where
don't leave.
First of all, it's just not good practice to take any player for PR purposes. It's all right, especially in like a sport like football, to take a kid hoping it might help you get his teammate. You got so many scholarships to play with.
Declan
you
know, McMahon.
That, well, what about, I mean, like all the kids that Indiana took from Center Grove when they were recruiting Caden Curry. Like, sure. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's listen, by works. The way, they're probably good football players if they were playing at Center Grove. Absolutely. Look at, I know he's
Carson Steele went to.
Well, I was thinking Matt Holt.
Yeah,
the linebacker. Who obviously, unfortunately, now had to kind of retire because of some injuries. But, like, you know, for a walk-on, he was a very, very good Big Ten linebacker. But especially in a sport like basketball, which is so culturally important here, you start taking kids for PR purposes, it can become a problem. And what happens when the next year, you know, you took the kid from, I don't know,
Bloomington East.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, you took the kid from North Vernon or, you know, Greensburg or Fort Wayne.
I like my made up school better, but I get
you. Or Peru. And the next year, you actually have some legitimate need for that 13th scholarship. And then you got to walk into the locker room and tell that kid you need him to leave. Because as you said, you got to win. And yes, the portal can help you win now more. And I think Indiana may well benefit from that this coming winter with the success they've had so far this spring. But the flip side is the portal can also take it away from you a lot faster, too. There's just a lot less time for, you know, sentiment and – I don't want to say patience because you do have to have patience, but
sentiment you have to have in the beginning to say the hardest thing I'm ever going to do to you is be honest with you. I have to lay out here's what it's going to look like, and if it doesn't look like this, well, I know kids don't want to hear that and parents don't want to hear that, but that's what I want to hear if I was a kid or a parent, the truth.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to be like, oh, but you promised me this. Well, the good news in this day and age, you can go across town and you can go to Tulane or you can go to DePaul or you can go – who was the last one I'm forgetting? What was the three that transferred out? Caleb Banks went to Tulane. CJ Gunn went to DePaul. And who was the third one that left?
Who am I forgetting?
Oh, we're all forgetting.
Payne Sparks went back to Ball State.
There you go. So there's always an out. You're never left out, per se. But that'll be interesting. I don't think they will fill the 13th scholarship. What do you feel?
I would be surprised because, again, on balance.
We just did 10 minutes of why you wouldn't fill it.
Well, and more than that, it's not even so much why you wouldn't fill it. It's why the sort of player that would make sense to fill it with is just not that common. Either an experienced guy that doesn't really want to play that much, that's willing to take not even a reserve role, but potentially basically a negligible role, or a guy that's currently injured, needs time anyway, or a guy that wants to redshirt for whatever reason. There's just, you know, there aren't a lot. There's not a big pool of those players laying around. If you can find one, fantastic. But you don't feel like, I don't think you feel like you need to. I would be curious to explore the reclass route. Kids can do that so much more often now. Because like prep
schools. Well, let's talk about that after the break because I think that's interesting. And the other angle I'll present to you is we've got a bunch of people in the NBA draft that are going to have to make up their mind in 10 days whether they're going to fish or cut bait. We'll talk about that when we come back. If that can work or not work, or do you just play it at 12 and go on? The great Zach Osterman is with us today. IndyStar.com, at Zach Osterman on the X. Please support local journalism. When we come back, we'll talk. What do we know about the schedule? We've talked about that. Is there anything something on the horizon. And the big event next week, I think, is down at the Huber. Well, I'll let Osterman help me out with that. The Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood. That's why he's here on Kirkwood. Happy hour. Glass in the afternoon. Open daily at 11 a.m. for lunch, dinner, or late night. We'll also get you an update on IU baseball. They're playing game two with Michigan tonight. Yes, they rearranged everything. If you're just joining the program, they already played at 1 o'clock. Michigan wins 3-2. 5 o'clock was first pitch at Bart Kaufman. Crazy Horse before the game, after the game, weekend brunch, 11 a.m. daily. All right, welcome back. Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour here on a Thursday. Zach Osterman in the jump seat live in the studio. Let's thank our friends at Sultan's Run. We have the golf on in the background, Valhalla. We'll give you the update there. Sultan's Run is in Jasper. It's less than 90 minutes, folks. It is fantastic. Sultansrun.com. Check out the photos if you haven't been. If you've already been, you know I'm nailing this dead on. Make your tee times. See what's going on. The food, the service, excellent.
I'll Google it, won't you?
Excellent. It is. Go ahead. Sultansrun.com. In lovely Jasper, Indiana. The top of the leaderboard in Louisville, the record-setting Xander Schauffele for the second major championship in the last four. The Californian has posted 62. He did so at Los Angeles Country Club last summer. And has,
where's that?
That's right. It's in Los Angeles. That was par 70. His 62 today was 9 under par. And that is the new course record at Valhalla, hosting its fourth PGA Championship. Only Southern Hills and Tulsa's hosted more. And Schauffele is off to a flying start. There have only been four rounds of 62 posted in major championship history, and he has two of them in the last 2 years.
Well, not counting my career in Rory McIlroy.
Well, that's it. That is what. Speaking of Mr. McIlroy, he's won his last two events he has entered. He shot 5 under par 66 today. He is tied for fourth with Scotsman Robert McIntyre and West Coast big boy hitters Tony Finau and Sahith Theegala. 6 under 65s are in the clubhouse, nice and safe. Did you see what Scottie Scheffler did? You know he's back this week.
Yeah, right? I saw you hold out.
His first iron shot back
After
3 weeks off and having a kid.
But I finished 24 under at Troon and won the British Open.
Troon, that's where the British Open is this year.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. Is it Troon? It is Royal Troon this year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then you're ready to go. I'll take you.
Course record, right?
I'll take you.
Surely.
Jason Day has the event record, 20 under par, 268. Brooks Koepka has the strokes record, 264, set back in 2018. Koepka's your defending champion. He is 4 under par, 67, 5 back. Brooks Koepka is the only major championship winner in the last 22 majors to start a round over par. He did that last year and win. This would be, let's see, if he wins this PGA Championship, that would be his fourth in 7 years.
Not bad.
Not even Tiger Woods did that. So we'll see. The late group, John Rahm, not playing very well. Mr. Scheffler is 2 or 3 under. He is 3 under through 10 and working his way up the board. Tom Hoagie isn't out late. He is 3 under through 14. And Tom Kim, 4 under through 12. He's not been playing very well. Belgian Thomas Dietrich, -5. Those are your best players on the course. It will take some doing to catch Schauffele. We'll see if Louisville gets any rain this afternoon. It's supposed to not be good in Louisville tomorrow, so we'll see. Tiger Woods, 1 over par. He was 1 under with 2 to play, 3 jacked 8 and 9 to finish his round. He was really, really happy about that finish, let me tell you. All right, baseball's going on right now at Bart Kaufman Field. Earlier today, I thought the game was at 5 o'clock. You're right, it is. Game 2 is. No game tomorrow. Game 1 was at 1 o'clock today. Indiana had a leadoff double go to waste in the bottom of the ninth. That's a bad job. Anyway, you cut that. You got to get runners over. They lose 3-2 here in the top of the third. In game number 2, Indiana leads 6-0. So they've unleashed the beast, as the kids like to say. They are leading Michigan in the top of the third. So they've been to the plate twice. They have 6 home runs. Devin Taylor led off game 1 with a home run. He has homered in game 2 as well, his 9th of the season. He's a 2-run home run there. The walks hurt Michigan, 4 runs in the first and then 2 runs in the second. So Indiana looking to level that series 1 apiece. And then the rubber match is going to be Saturday at 2 o'clock because there is no baseball tomorrow. That game we're talking about is on the Big Ten Network. let's stick with basketball for a minute, then we'll circle back to baseball. We'll wrap up our conversation on we were going to break. You were talking about maybe you get a reclassification. I suggested the NBA, who's going to stay in, who's going to leave the draft.
Yeah, the tricky part is most of the players that are still in the NBA draft at this point, if they aren't going to stay in, they're probably going to have some pretty high-level options. Now, that doesn't mean you're guaranteed, but if you're still in the draft now, is Combine over? Combine's
if
over.
If not, it just ended.
Yeah. You know, if you're still in now, because we're in like the dwindling days here before you have to withdraw from the draft to be eligible for next season, unless that rule's changed. I'm not losing my mind. It hasn't.
I don't think so.
There's been talk about it every year for like the last like 5 years. But, you know, if you're still in the draft right now, I think the chances are you're probably going to be. Because, like, again, we've talked about this before. The portal moves in waves. And one of the last big ones, maybe the last big one, is teams that still have clear and present needs and maybe still have some NIL money or like a couple big spots on the roster to fill, a lot of minutes they can promise, essentially playing the gamble and waiting till the 11th hour to see who pops out of the NBA draft and goes back to college but still wants to transfer. Because as we talked about, if you were in the portal by May 1,
you can do anything you want.
You're good. So, you know, I suspect the pool of players who are still in the NBA draft pool but will eventually wind their way back to college that would want to be the 13th man, even on a good team, and Indiana may well be a good team, is probably not very large.
My point is, and I'm not saying that you're wrong. Don't get me wrong. My point would be if someone said, you know what, I screwed this up. I misinterpreted what professional basketball was going to be or entail. They come back. They're not quote unquote the 13th one. They just want to come back and say, well, I like your roster. And if I'm going to come back, I want to play somewhere. Can you fit them in?
Maybe. Maybe.
Do you need the money? I don't know how this works.
That's a little
bit.
Well, and then there's obviously the question of, you know, how much of your NIL resources.
But who has any NIL left at this time?
Well, teams that might have basically sort of had to leave it late, missed on some other targets and said, hey, what we're going to do is we're going to wait and we're going to see what comes out of the NBA draft pool, and we're going to throw around some heavy NIL dollars for a couple big time guys, try to get them there at the very end. It's also worth saying, like, we're talking about a finite number here of guys that are still
absolutely
in the draft that don't intend to stay in the draft,
like less than five,
but will transfer.
Yeah,
it's probably a higher number than that. We're not, like, I'm talking about will transfer anywhere.
It's
probably a higher number than five. It's still not an enormous number.
Gotcha.
You're still not talking about a huge pool of players. If you ask me right now,
and I am because you're right here with me,
you know, what are the likeliest outcomes for that? You know, rank the likeliest outcomes for the 13th scholarship. I would say likeliest outcome, you know, 1 through 4, 1 being likeliest, 4 being least likely. Number 1, it doesn't get filled. Number 2, it gets filled with a player who has a motivating reason to sit out next season. Whether it's a reclass, which I think is interesting.
Reclass, rehab.
Rehab, an injury, you know, a player who's injured and is just kind of floating for a home. Number 3 would be that it is just kind of filled the normal route in terms of there's just a player out there that likes Indiana, decides I'm comfortable playing 8 minutes a night, you know, maybe sometimes if that, my role being a lot smaller come Big Ten play in all likelihood, or I back myself to go in there and fight for those minutes, and if I don't get them, then that's just on me. I'm not going to, you know, be a bad seed in the clubhouse or whatever. That to me is number 3, and number 4 is that it gets filled with somebody who's currently declared for the draft.
Makes sense. Zach Osterman, Indy star. And then the other great thing about this, there is no stop date. I guess that would be the day school starts, right? You got to be enrolled. So this can go
That basically just what it comes down to is you can't practice or work out with a team in any official capacity
unless you
were taking classes. So typically Indiana's, you know, I'm looking at the calendar over here. What does this go through?
That's the end of May there. Well, almost the end of May, the 26th.
So
that's a Sunday.
I'm guessing if Indiana's roster doesn't start getting on campus the week of the 27th, then it'll start getting on campus the week after that.
Extra week.
Whatever the academic calendar looks like in terms of when that particular summer, because I know summer sessions have gotten a little bit more staggered than they used to just be one and two. I know they're a little more staggered than they used to be. Whenever that particular early June, late May, early June summer session starts, that's when the rosters will be here. That's when you, if you're going to join for the summer, and this is a bit of supposition, I have always sort of gotten the sense Mike Woodson did not love the idea of adding a player late. Like, once he got his team together, he liked the idea, like, this is my team is my team. You never say never, and listen, we've only seen him go through three off seasons, and the third one's not even complete here. Or I guess this would be his fourth off season, I take that back. But it's not complete. So it's not like we have an overwhelming amount of evidence. But, like, you know, it just listening to little bits and pieces he said in the past, I think it would have to be a really compelling case to get him back in a to get somebody in like mid-late July or between the summer session and the fall semester.
Unless it was a complete surprise, checked all the boxes, wow, we didn't see that coming. Because reclassification is not easy. It's not.
Well, what I would say is it's easier than it used to be in the sense that a lot of these kids are, you know, there's a reason why you don't hear about too many guys being academically ineligible anymore.
Totally.
And it's because, number one, I think the NCAA, and I think justifiably on this isn't like a player movement issue or whatever. I think they have worked to educate people and to find a comfortable middle ground to say, like, let's try to get to a place where we're not excluding kids.
Right. That's,
you know,
not their job.
Like
right.
It
this is a portal, literally, to move them forward.
Right. But I think there's also just the educational system has become so much more refined around athletes. There's prep schools. There's boarding schools. There's so much literature and education now about, you know, this is what your ACT needs to be or your SAT needs to be or your GPA or whatever and all these different things. I just think we've gotten better.
We've learned how to make money off education.
Well, and I think, yeah, probably that. But I think we've also just gotten better at, you know, really making sure we're providing kids the opportunity.
I'm old enough to remember Prop 48.
There you go.
Back in the old days. So reclassification is interesting because you'd lose your senior year. You don't, right? When we talk about reclassification, we're talking about juniors going to college a year early, right? Is that what we're talking about when we talk about reclassification? So
right.
You have to be in good academic standing.
Sometimes guys wind up being old for their grade and then they double back. And it's tough. I mean, like,
back.
Listen,
I love
you
it.
Know, I mean, like, I mean, Race Thompson gave up his entire senior year of high school. Like, that's, you know.
That is tough. That's why.
You don't necessarily need to do that. But you find the right guy who's interested. Again, the flip side to all this is it's not going to be some high profile, oh, he's a top 10 player in 2026 or 2025, and he's going to reclassify 2024 and come to Indiana. That ship has sailed. Those players generally by this point know what they're doing one way or the other. But again, like a Race Thompson type situation, yeah, maybe you could find somebody who's just ready to start college early. And if you can get them to agree to the idea that their career is going to kind of start slow and move along, you know, at a certain pace, then, you know, that just goes back to what we've talked about before. There's got to be buy-in on both sides.
May 29th is probably the next big day on the IU calendar, right? That's the what do we call it down there? Hoosiers Connect. I always want to get that right. That's the big NIL fundraiser down at, what is that, Huber Farms? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Huber's Orchard and Winery, if we want to be.
Well, I don't, yeah.
If we want to be formal about it.
I'm guessing that's sold out. Wouldn't you guess that would be sold out right now?
I would think so, yeah.
It's Wednesday, May 29th, but are you guys going to get, you guys being the media, are you going to get access that day? Is that something you go to?
That is typically what happens.
Okay.
And that, I don't know. It's never been fully clear to me kind of how this became part of the
calendar.
Yeah. But it is very much, it has become kind of this, first of all, it has become just like customary for at minimum the men's basketball coach and the football coach to attend and to speak, not just to the audience, but to the media. Sometimes we get Todd Yeagley. Sometimes we get Terry Moran. Sometimes we, you know, get somebody else, but at least those two. This used to be part of that tailgate tour Indiana did
yes.
every summer. They don't do that as much anymore. But this event has been around for a very long time.
They don't want to be with the unwashed masses. This is for the
it stood the test of time. For whatever reason, it has become customary for the football coach and the men's basketball coach to talk to the media at this event, which means it has become customary because of where it falls in the calendar. It's always been late May, early June. For it to sort of serve as basically the turning of the page.
Draw a line every once
in a while, softball, baseball will still be playing. Maybe you've got like an individual in track nationals or golf or something like that. But this, you know, the vast majority of sports are done with their seasons. The academic year is effectively over. You're in summer school. So from a fall semester, spring semester standpoint, it is. And it is this natural sort of pivot point where you start talking more about the next season. Your freshmen are getting to campus. How are they looking? What are the early returns in your roster? What do you need to get out of this summer? What are you looking forward to most about preseason or whatever?
There hasn't just been any other media since the end of the season to talk about this.
Pretty much. Football's obviously done stuff in the spring, but sure. Yeah.
And football is a little bit different, and I mean a little bit, a lot, but I'm going to say this and someone will get mad about it, and I really don't care, but Mike Woodson and Kurt Cignetti are the two guys that are showing up.
Right. Yes.
That's where the money goes. That's where the money is needed.
Every once in a while, a third coach comes in.
But that would be great if they did, and I'm not knocking women's basketball before anybody gets their pitchforks out. I'm not. That's what I see. On the thing, I don't know. Maybe Terry Morin is going to be there. It's not that Terry Morin doesn't have to be there, or she can't.
But it's,
come.
I mean, the thing is, like, there's an order of events. So right. you get everybody together. You want to glad hand some people. It's a big fundraising event, as you say. It's now an NIL event. It used to be an athletics department event. It was arguably much more important in a time before. You know, kind of internet.
Now, it does say here we'll feature players from Indiana men's and women's basketball and football programs.
Okay, sometimes they bring players. They've brought them in the past. That's not.
It just doesn't say Terry
and
Morin
again,
listed here.
It also sometimes depends. And again, that's probably happening now in part because of the NIL aspect. They've brought players in the past. Some of that sometimes just depends on, are there players around? Did any of them stay? Have any of them come back? Is there anybody that can come do this? I think Yogi Ferrell and Thomas Bryant came 1 year. That probably wouldn't have happened. Because, maybe Bryant would have been there. Anyway, the point is.
After his freshman year, maybe?
You get what I'm saying. Well, Yogi Ferrell wouldn't have come after Thomas Bryant's freshman year.
You
get what I'm saying. It is an annual event. These in-person fundraisers obviously used to be more important to the athletics department when it was a smaller budget.
And there's no internet.
You need more of that retail connection. Now it's the tradition of it. It's the chance to support NIL. And again, when you talk about there being an order of events, Don Fisher's going to get up there. He's going to introduce the football coach. The football coach is going to be expected to say some things. Don Fisher's going to get back up there. Well, he's probably going to introduce Scott Dolson first, then the football coach, then the basketball coach. Each one of them is going to be expected to make some remarks. At a certain point, there's only so many hours in the evening. You're not going to keep everybody until 11:30 at night being like, and now Steve Aird wants to talk about how you vibe. But no offense, Steve, if you're listening. But, you know, you're not going to have
golf. Thanks for listening, coach.
You're not going to have golf up there, you know, until the small hours just to have everybody.
Right.
For whatever reason, you know, because we would, you know, we would go to Indy when these coaches would come to Indy.
Oh, they used to go to South Bend.
The tailgate tour, they went to Fort Wayne, they went to Evansville. I feel like I went to Evansville at least once for one of
these. Why did you go is more important.
Because who was talking.
There you go. That's my point.
But, like, for whatever reason, this event has always been the one that got circled as football coach, men's basketball coach. Off-season updates.
Because
it's part of the rhythm of this beat.
Yeah, and it was the first time it was direct quotes in a long time, usually from any of the parties involved. And that makes sense because everybody always has the great off-season. Nobody has ever been outworked in the weight room. Nobody has ever been outworked in the classroom. We know all that. So what do we hear from these things? What are you going to
You're talking about scheduling. I mean, Mike Woodson has talked about the Kentucky game openly in the past. I think...
Is that a big deal now that California is gone? But, yes, it is.
But it's more kind of the idea. Like, you know, his the first time he did one of these, we got him to talk about Kentucky. We got him to talk about Louisville. We got him to talk about, I think, I want to say Battle for Atlantis, which eventually obviously came true. It's also a chance, you know, I remember doing a story off talking to Tom Allen about some issue of the day. I forget what. I think it was the Big Ten changing up its scheduling format before expansion and the idea of getting away from divisions and all these different kinds of things. So it's also kind of a chance, a little bit like media days, to ask coaches the bigger picture topics when it's not like, how's so-and-so's ankle? What do you think of Zach Edey? You know, what do you
what
need?
Is your what philosophy you, on German philosophy?
What do you need to get out of this 4 road games in 5 stretch, whatever it is? It's a little bit of everything, but for whatever reason, and this predates me on this beat, if you talk about the annual sort of rhythm and calendar of this of the IU beat for reporters, this has always been a media event. Always.
Zach Osterman is the best. He'll come back tomorrow. We'll talk IU baseball. They're leading 6-0 at last check. That's the good news. We'll talk about their prospects for – well, this is it. Then they have – they're at Omaha next week for the Big Ten Championships, in or out. We'll talk about basketball scheduling. Our friends at Purdue announced they're going to play Marquette early in the season. We know IU is going to the battle for Atlantis. When will we start seeing and hearing things on all of that? Well, tune in tomorrow, and we'll talk to Zach all about it. Good to see you, buddy. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, Glass in the Afternoon. Well, David Hayes is next. Reds at 9:40. And away we go on a Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour. Big show Friday, the 17th day of May. And, well, we've had baseball schedules twisted and turned and upside down and all around. Well, Indiana got started with Michigan at 5 o'clock today. But, Glass, you said yesterday they weren't going to play today. I did. They changed their mind. The forecast changed. That's what happens here in Indiana. So get over to Bart Kauffman Field if you like. It is the final game of the regular season. It is the final home game for Indiana baseball this year, so you've got a chance to get over and do all of that. Indiana will be heading to Omaha for the Big Ten baseball tournament starting Tuesday of next week, so we will get into baseball here momentarily with our great friend Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star, at Zach Osterman on the X, the Twitterverse, IndyStar.com, all the fun things going on. Happy Friday, brother. How are you?
I'm good, Glass. How about you?
Yesterday we were talking basketball, and we will continue that discussion because Indiana basketball never takes a day off. It's like the NFL. It just never stops. There's just something else going somewhere here, somewhere there. We talked about adding Mr. Hatton, Langdon Hatton from Bellarmine yesterday. We both came to the conclusion that we thought probably that 13th and final scholarship will remain open unless – and, folks, you can go back and listen to our discussion from yesterday at WGCLradio.com. But as we were talking late yesterday, well, this time of year we're going to go to Huber Farms, not next week, but the week after. So we'll get some more information from basketball and football and all the great things that go along with that. And I mentioned to you off the air, our friends at Purdue have already announced a couple games for the upcoming season. And lo and behold, you said, well, pay attention because Indiana will be doing something quite similar to that. And here we are on a Friday, the Hoosiers. Well, we know we're going to the Battle of Atlantis, that's for sure. That field has changed around a little bit. And a new opener in the early portion of November. Who is on the docket for the Hoosiers? You're on mute.
Yeah, no, Eastern Illinois, this is kind of how this winds up happening, is other schools make announcements on scheduling, and Indiana, you know, just kind of the schedule almost kind of comes together by picking at basically all the other different pieces. November 10th, which I am looking at the schedule, I'm guessing that will be the first day of the season. No, that's a Sunday. So the first day of the season should be the 5th. I take that back. So the 10th is a Sunday. So, you know, you're talking about, I would imagine Indiana will play on Tuesday night, the 5th. That'll be the season opener, whoever they play. And then I guess I'm probably assuming they might have a game on the Friday. They might not. It's worth remembering they'll have 3 games in 3 days in Atlantis the week of Thanksgiving. So they aren't necessarily going to have to compress too many of their non-conference weeks because one is already kind of compacted for them. But anyway, the point is Eastern Illinois is on the schedule. You know, what is there to know about Eastern Illinois?
Well, I'm ready to go, buddy. That's Marty Simmons' team. There we go. There's your connection right there.
Well, there you go. And they were 320th in KenPom last season. They went 8-10 in their conference. I'm literally just looking at this right now. They had a really good player, small school player named Jordan Booker. I saw him. I feel like I caught one or two Eastern Illinois teams or Eastern Illinois games just in the, you know, in the process of you're flipping channels or you're on the ESPN app or whatever. I think his nickname might have been Tiger.
Well, their roster has 8 players on it as of the 17th day of May. One of them is a familiar name to folks around here, Cooper Jacoby. He played at Silver Creek with Trey Kaufman Wren. He was at the University of Toledo and has transferred over. So that's another Indiana connection, along with former Hoosier Marty Simmons, who obviously was at Evansville for a while as well. Rich McBride's one of their assistant coaches. He played at Illinois back on the 2005 team that went to the national championship. That was Luther Head and Dee Brown and Darren Williams, that squad. So, oh, there's always fun things to talk about there. But you play Eastern Illinois for one reason, right? You know Marty's going to give you a deal. Things are good. It's a familiar face in that angle. And you need a win to start the season off because, as you mentioned, battle for Atlantis, there's not going to be any time to sit by the pool and go to the water park and play with the Dolphins.
No, I mean, yeah, it's – this is going to be, I think, in all likelihood, one of those games that if you're Indiana, this is for experimentation. This is for just sort of trying to try a few different things out, essentially, and you know, kind of let some stuff. I don't know what the right word would be. Simmer, percolate. I'm not really sure what we're looking for there, but you know what I'm saying in terms of try out some different lineups, try out some different combinations and different things. It'll just be, I mean, I don't know. It'll be, you know, let's be honest. It'll just be kind of one of those games. You know, it's the sort of game Indiana should expect to win. It's the sort of game Indiana should expect to win fairly comfortably, although
they didn't last year. And I was going to ask you about having some maybe easier scheduled games earlier, because we talked about some of those non-convincing wins last year you thought did not help down the stretch because they had too many close games against teams they should have blown out.
No, maybe not. Eastern Illinois is also the team that beat Iowa, if you remember, a few years ago.
I do.
So, you know, I mean, listen, they're, you know, they didn't, I think they beat one other team in the KenPom top 250 that season. So, you know, we're not going to go crazy over that. But no, I mean, there's probably something to that. I think we are kind of at a place where if you're Indiana and you're challenging yourself with stuff like Atlantis, and I do expect Indiana to try and add another, you know, fairly high profile non-conference game here at some point relatively soon.
That's to replace Kansas, right?
What? Well, I don't know if it'll – I don't know that it will feel like a direct replacement. We can talk about that in a minute. But, you know, you're allowed a couple of these games every year, you know, KenPom sub 300, you know, games that, yeah, you should win comfortably. It's also worth pointing out, I mean, Indiana played 3 teams in the Ken – that finished outside the KenPom top 250 last year, including Army, which finished 344th. And they won those games by 8. 17 and 13 points. So, I mean, let's not go crazy in terms of what we're giving Indiana credit for, I guess, if you understand what I'm saying. Last season, it might have just been about where last season's team was in November and December and probably even in January. But, you know, this is the kind of game for a team that's probably going to have some growing pains to work through, a lot of new faces, a lot of guys in different roles. It's the kind of game where you can do some tinkering, you can do some experimenting and potentially not be in a situation where, you know, you are in danger of losing the game. Although, as Indiana probably learned the hard way last season, you have to be, you know, you still have to get that done. You still have to get that, you still have to take care of business in those games, or as you said, it can become a problem.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, Big Show Friday, joining us, talking Hoosier Hoops. So Eastern Illinois, Sunday, November 10th, Marty Simmons, the former Hoosier player, obviously with ties to IU. He was at Evansville forever as well. He's from Illinois, just across the river from Terre Haute. Lawrenceville, Illinois, I think it is. Anyhow, we'll get more familiar with Marty when we get closer and closer to that day. The Hoosiers then will head to the Battle for Atlantis. That is Thanksgiving. What is that, Wednesday? Thursday, Friday, somewhere in there. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I think
I know they play on Thanksgiving, which Maui typically doesn't. Maui typically wraps on the Wednesday. Right.
So they play the 27th, 28th, and 29th. So if that Wednesday is the 27th, which I believe it is, that's when they will be in Atlantis. The big shakeup in Atlantis is not a big shakeup, but Providence is going to replace Creighton. Creighton is heading to the Las Vegas NIL made-for-TV event, which just popped up a couple days ago. I don't know if you're familiar with any of that. But you get rid of a Big East team for a Big East team, right? Providence, Creighton, the like-for-like substitution there. And then that will be – is that Kim English now at Providence after Ed Cooley went to Georgetown? Boy, you got to – my mom always said you got to have a scorecard and a pencil to keep track of all this stuff, and it is true. But the battle for Atlantis is loaded. We don't know the order of games, but there are some very familiar faces in there that Indiana has seen, it seems like. Oh, I don't want to say every year, but, well, there's Louisville. We did that last year. Who else is in there? I see West Virginia. I can't remember off
there's the full field. If we replace Creighton with Providence, is Arizona, Providence, Davidson, Gonzaga, IU, Louisville, Oklahoma, and West Virginia.
So, yeah, Louisville, Arizona, teams you've played in the last couple of years as well. And did IU play Providence somewhere? Did they play them
Maui in the COVID Maui.
So I'm not hallucinating. They've played all these teams. No. It's kind of boring, but I don't know how these all come together. It's great that Indiana's invited, and I always point that out because while the on-court success has not been prevalent here in the last decade or so, Indiana still gets the offers to these big boy events, and the fans travel, and people are going to tune in to watch them. So that's the good news. And you don't have to run around trying to schedule teams because you're going to get three really good ones in the Bahamas, right?
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, the flip side is obviously you don't want to put all your eggs in that basket. You know, I mean, we've seen, I mean, listen, you know, I think back to, and I know, I kind of sometimes can be guilty of just reciting KenPom as the Bible, but I think back to when Indiana went to Maui in 2016, they lost Wake Forest, they beat St. John's, they lost UNLV. Not one of those teams finished in the KenPom top 100. St. John's finished outside the top 200 that year. So, you know, you can't necessarily just say, oh, we'll get all the wins we need there. All it takes is sending into the loser's bracket, and then suddenly maybe you're not playing, you know, the teams you hope you're playing from a quality perspective. But it does mean you don't have to go chasing three or four of those games. You've got some of that, you know, kind of already, taken care of for you.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, checking in. The Vegas field has Alabama, Houston, Notre Dame, Oregon, Rutgers, San Diego State, Texas A&M, and Creighton. So if you're wondering what that is, well, that's just whatever way they can figure out what goes on, multi-tournament or multi-team events. That's what the MTE stands for. Is that right?
Yeah.
So they're going to go to the Players Era Festival instead. And every school in that earns a $1 million guarantee to their NIL collective. So that'll be the next new thing moving forward. Maui used to be great, right? Because you gotta have a virgin pina colada out of a coconut and go to a luau. Well, now Vegas is going to start throwing around some money. How do you think these MTEs are going to evolve? Just your opinion. I mean, I know you don't know. No one's come out and said, here's how we're going to do it. But this isn't going to be the first one or the last one that Las Vegas is going to hold or money's going to be thrown about once we get a little deeper into this, do you believe?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that has kind of become more of a talking point. And I think it's gotten around, you know, bowl games as well. Kind of this idea that, like, well, how do you get players to stop opting out of bowl games? Well, bowl games could offer, you know, NIL incentives potentially, you know, to players who participate. And that's always a little bit tricky in terms of making sure you're following all the rules. But, you know, listen, everybody will find a way. If the will is there, the way will be found. If you understand what I'm saying, kind of this modern era So I don't think it's, you know, this is the first sort of high profile instance of this in basketball, but I don't think it'll be the last. I think that you're going to see sort of more of these potential kind of opportunities for athletes, because again, the motivation here is you want the best players and you want the biggest spectacle. And now you can, you know, you can provide that in a more meaningful way. Again, the big one that I think people have started to talk a little bit more about is bowl games. And I know we're talking about basketball, but it's the same kind of idea, which is, you know, you make yourself more appealing if you can incentivize certain things, you know, for athletes in kind of the modern era and the ways that are legal now. So I think it's, again, it's the first time we've seen it in a major basketball event that I'm aware of, but I don't think it'll be the last.
Can't be, not when money's involved. And that sounds like a lot of money to perhaps a fan or perhaps a normal working person. But $1 million for 8 teams or 12 teams or 16 teams, that's 16 million. That just shows you what the organizers are getting, the advertisers are paying, and well, a nickel ain't worth a dime anymore, as Yogi Berra once used to say. $1 million just isn't a big deal. Heck, there's a young man that's heading to Washington making $2 million. Did I see that right this week?
I think that's what's been reported. Yeah, it's, you know, we'll see how much of that's true, but that's certainly what's been on the wind. So.
Well, that wind has been published in lots and lots of places. Is it required to verify? Is it a neat story? I know you've talked about when we catch the fish, they get bigger and bigger and bigger with these. But they said, hey, we're going to do this and do that. Is that establishing some kind of line in the sand or some bar that everybody's going to point to and say, well, he got this much, you better start getting more together? That sounds like a domino that nobody wanted to hear falling, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't. It's tricky because on the one hand, you know, you're always dealing with roster dynamics, and you know, is it going to become a problem if guys know that other guys get more money? That's always in play. You know, sometimes schools are a little bit hesitant to talk about some of this stuff because they don't want to create discord among their coaches, essentially. But on the other hand, you know, especially if you're a school like Washington, you're headed into the Big Ten. You just hired a new coach. You know, there's some momentum behind your program, but you probably also got some serious work ahead of you. You know, I mean, before kind of Danny Sprinkle pulled his roster back together, and I haven't looked at it too closely since, but, you know, maybe still after, you might look at Washington as one of those schools that might not even make the Big Ten tournament, you know, in terms of, I don't know if people have picked up on this that much. The plan at this moment is to only take 15 teams in the Big Ten tournament out of 18 once the league expands this summer. So maybe there's a desire to sort of say, hey, this is the kind of bat we can swing in this space. And, you know, this is how serious we are about supporting our coach and building a winner in the winter, I suppose. But I just think that, you know, it's sort of like a situation by situation thing. For some people, it's probably not the best. For some programs, for some spots, it's probably not the best thing in the world for it to be publicized. Some places probably just don't need to publicize it. Like if you're in Indiana, a Kentucky, a North Carolina, you probably don't need people to think like, wow, look at this huge NIL deal they got. You know, you'll let the resources speak for themselves when you sit down at the table with the players you're talking to. But maybe for a program like Washington, there is some desire to say, hey, like let's be a little bit more public and you know, kind of let people know we mean business.
Well, yeah, and in basketball, that's different because last year they had the college football playoff. You had Penix up for Heisman. You already had that attention. Now you need different attention. And it is interesting. 15 of the 18 teams will be heading to the Big Ten basketball tournament. Is that on the wind?
That was my understanding anyway. Is it'll be top 15, and then I forget exactly I forget exactly the structure of the bracket.
Well, there'll be double buys and all the fun things that go along with that.
I know it's going to stay. I know it's going to stay Wednesday, Sunday. I think that was part of the appeal of it, was they didn't want to start it on the Tuesday like the ACC does.
Good, I like that.
I'm not sure I'm not sure I completely agree, but, you know, whatever.
We shall see how it works out. So that would be four games on the opening Wednesday instead of two is how I would understand it if we had to go backwards and add teams and do all that stuff. But we'll see when that becomes official. Zach Osterman is our guest today. I think I misspoke earlier. I said baseball starts at 5 tonight. No, that's not true. It starts at 6. I apologize to anybody that heard that and ran over there. Well, you're early. It's better than being late. sorry. Indiana split with Michigan yesterday. The final Big Ten regular season game is tonight. The Big Ten baseball tournament does not take every team in the Big Ten either. Indiana now has qualified for 11 straight after their victory yesterday. How big is tonight's game and how much is on the line in Omaha starting on Tuesday of next week for Jeff Mercer and the gang to get into the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I saw, was it Baseball America, I think, had them in, along with Nebraska, had Illinois out.
Who is leading the league.
Yeah, enough. I mean, again, you don't get the automatic bye for winning the league. You get the automatic bye for winning the Big Ten tournament. I'm looking at RPI right now. Indiana is 61, Illinois is 51. Not that it's just going to come down only to those two teams. You know, but the point is they're kind of in the same general region in the RPI. It does just kind of feel like Indiana's probably in a position where it's just sort of like you just win, like just win baseball games. I think it felt like they kind of took the double whammy, if you want to say, of, you know, losing out on that Nebraska series narrowly on whichever one of those two games they lost. I know they lost close. I forget which one. And then not getting the opportunity at Louisville, and not necessarily that they would have won that game, but I mean Louisville, if you look at the RPI numbers, obviously if you know just anything about kind of college baseball in recent years, I think Louisville's right around the top. They're 54th. I finally found them on the list. They're 54th. That would have been a decent road win. You know, would have kind of shored some things up. I do think Indiana, especially with a win against Michigan tonight, I think Indiana, you know, positions itself at least firmly on the bubble going into the conference tournament. Some good work there probably wouldn't go amiss. You know, there's still some valuable wins on Indiana's schedule to date in terms of, you know, some of the teams they beat back in the non-conference. I know it wasn't necessarily always a straight line for Indiana in non-conference play, but they did pick up some decent wins there. You know, they beat Indiana State. That's a good win. Indiana State's top 20 in the RPI. In fact, they're top 10. They're 10th in the RPI. So that's a good win. It feels like Indiana's going to be kind of right there on the bubble, and that generally means basically anything you can do to get yourself off it. Do that and do what you can.
Absolutely right, because you won the first game against Nebraska with that huge comeback. You know, you're down 5-3 or 5-2 or whatever it was, and you score all those runs, and you lose the next two. And if you get beat tonight, now you've lost 4 out of 5. And if you happen to stub your toe in the Big Ten tournament, I mean, I don't want to be talking about losing 7 of 8, but if you do that, the bubble. I don't know how strong that bubble is, and I don't know how. I know beating people is good, but you don't want to draw attention to yourself the wrong way this time of year either, do you?
No, and, you know, I don't know if you and I had this conversation last week or not. I had it with somebody where it almost, to some extent, feels like you know, the Big Ten is actually quietly kind of better this year. If you look at it, they got two teams in the RPI top 40, but they've got seven teams in the top 80, and I think 9 teams in the top 100. And even the teams that are outside the top 100 are still pretty much all in the top 150. You know, I mean, there have been years where there are multiple Big Ten teams like 200 or worse in the RPI nationally. And the point is, we've talked for years about the Big Ten sort of raising its floor as a conference, how much money's gone into baseball, new facilities, you know, multiple programs making runs in the NCAA tournament. Indiana went to Omaha, Michigan went to Omaha, Illinois, I think, hosted a super regional not long after Indiana went to Omaha. You know, it's become a conference. And now obviously they're about to add USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington, schools that have real genuine heritage in baseball. So it's become a conference that has kind of raised all boats, but it also feels a little bit like a You know, every once in a while you see like the Atlantic 10, to use an example of a mid-major conference that, you know, sometimes can get three or even four teams into the league. Sometimes what can happen is the conference is too deep and everybody beats each other up a little too much and nobody's numbers wind up standing out enough. And it almost feels like the Big Ten is a bit of a victim of its own success this year in terms of there are too many good teams to allow, you know, two, three, four truly, truly sort of great ones, teams that we get to Selection Monday and you just say they're in the field, no questions asked, absolutely no chance they're not. You know, it almost feels like the Big Ten is so good this year that it's maybe a little bit of a victim of its own success in ways that it hasn't been in the past, because you do have, you know, a number of these teams that maybe would, you know, maybe they would be a little bit more empty calorie in some senses, but there would be some, you know, maybe two, three, four teams that would have more wins and it would feel like they'd separated themselves from the pack a little bit more. The flip side is, you know, every once in a while we talk about those mid-major conferences. We saw it with the Mountain West in basketball this year. Every once in a while, the committee looks at you and says, actually, we just rate the conference. And we actually think that all the good work that you did in your conference this season, you know, that all that, you know, all that, that basically means that you should be, essentially, we actually just think the conference is really good. And yeah, you have a bunch of teams on the bubble, but we're going to put them all in because we just think the conference is better than, you know, we're rating the conference and therefore giving you credit for all the times you smacked each other around rather than the other way around. And they use the Mountain West as an example this year because they got six bids in the NCAA tournament in men's basketball. You know, is there a world where we're talking about an Indiana team that's, you know, I don't know, 32 and 23 or 33 and 24, you know, in the NCAA tournament as an at-large? I don't know that we would have seen that, you know, 15 years ago. So maybe we'll see what the committee thinks basically of the Big Ten, but it does feel like maybe the conference has just almost kind of gotten to a place where the floor is tougher than it used to be and tougher than you know, it normally would be. And that's maybe pulled everybody back to the middle just a little bit more.
You heading to Omaha, buddy? You're going to be with me next week.
I will be with you.
Oh, goody. We'll watch together then on the Big Ten Network. Indiana, Michigan, the home closing game. Yeah, final game of the regular season starts well in just a couple of minutes at 6 o'clock. Thanks for your time, buddy. Have a great weekend, and we'll get after it next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.
That's my pal, Zach Osterman, from the Indianapolis Star, at Zach Osterman, IndyStar.com. Support local journalism, kids. Buy a subscription so he can continue to tell the great stories of what's happening. Our IU Insider, and he joins us every Thursday. And Big Show Friday. Well, baseball's getting ready to start. We know there's a huge NBA game tonight. Indianapolis will host Game 6, the Knicks and the Pacers. Mark Boyle's pregame starts at 8 o'clock. We'll tip it just after 8:30 right here on WGCL. So tune in on your Friday night, and let's hope we can force that Game 7 in New York right back here on WGCL. That would be Sunday, 3 p.m. pregame for a 3:30 tip. Have a great Friday night. We'll be back with you to get you revved up and ready to go for Memorial Day weekend next weekend. We're here all 5 days with you next week. Have a great Friday night. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour is over.